Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
Oh, yeah, here I am. Welcome to the program. I'm not where I usually am, and I'm not alone. I have a canine here. I'm sitting in the childhood bedroom of my brother, in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I was just, you know how you can live in a place for a million years or close? This bedroom is as it has been since 1952. And I'm looking at, I'm staring at this right before the show started, the wallpaper. The wallpaper is a drawings that is repeated, obviously, because it's wallpaper, of a ship, of a sailing ship. And then it has some maps and stuff behind it. And that sort of sailing motif, it's in the curtains on the window. And there's another, I'm looking at another map that's hanging on it's all this like, anyway, our family was never into sailing. Bill, my brother, would not have chosen this. I don't know where this came from, but I for the first time as I'm sitting here, I noticed that under the sailing ship, which is depicted without its sails unfurled. Is that what you would say? I don't know what the proper verb is. So you see the three masts and under it says in very fancy kind of old fashioned script, the Charles W. Morgan. And right before, if you had asked me, so I lived in this house for the first two decades of my life. If I asked my brother, what's the name of the ship on your bedroom walls? I bet he doesn't know. It'll be curious, and as soon as the show's over, I'm going to ask him. Because the Charles W. Morgan, because wallpaper repeats, is written about, I don't know, 30 times on his wall. I bet he doesn't know. Maybe he does. So while I was sitting here, I, for the first time, noticed it's the Charles W. Morgan. And I thought, well, I'll Google Charles W. Morgan. And so just as the show started, it popped up, and it turns out, I mean, I find this more interesting, obviously, than you do, but the Charles W. Morgan was a whaling ship out of New Bedford, Massachusetts, and 1841, it was its maiden voyage. And the reason it is in any way worthy of, I guess, being on a wallpaper is that it is historic. It is historic because it is the last wooden whaling ship. There's the dog. The last wooden whaling ship in the world. I'm going to see if I can let my dog go. Okay, hang on. I knew this was going to be a little difficult. Okay, go. Get out. Okay. All right. Sorry, guys. You're just going to have to bear with me. Things should calm down tomorrow. The house is in a bit of an uproar. My brother's here. His dog's here. I think that's what my dog said. So just... sorry, there's just not a easy place for us to be this morning. Anyway, did I note the date? October 3rd, ladies and gentlemen. I got the dog out. Now the dog's barking to come in. I don't know what to do. Okay, so let me, getting away from wooden whaling ships. I do want to note a few things from, you know, just being in a new, another place. When I was sitting in the kitchen with my mother this weekend, the phone rang, and even she, at her late age, has learned that you don't jump to pick it up, which was a, you know, in older people, that is just a immediate reaction. Phone rings, you pick it up. But even my mother has been finally taught, don't. Check who's calling. If you don't recognize the number, then it's probably a telemarketer. Do not pick it up. And so the phone rang. She didn't move. I didn't move. And we didn't recognize the number. But then when the answering machine came on, some guy started droning. And I sort of heard out of the corner of my ear that he was from the Democratic Party. He was calling because, and we still weren't picking up. My mother wasn't hearing any of it. And then I heard him say something to the effect of your ballot was disallowed. That's when I jumped, grabbed the phone and said, hello? And wow, what ensued was a rather lengthy conversation with a volunteer for the Wisconsin Democratic Party who noted that my mother's absentee ballot, which she had already filled out and mailed in, had been denied and returned. He said, I'm simply calling to find out if she still has the ballot. Does she have the ballot? Has it been returned? And all these questions are like, but first of all, how does he know? I said, upon further questioning, yes, indeed, my mother has the ballot. Yes, indeed, I find the ballot. Still talking to this guy. The ballot had been filled out. The ballot had been put in the special ballot envelope and sent in. The ballot had then been rejected, returned to my mother with a letter saying that it had not been properly filled out and thus was denied, but giving her an opportunity to give it another try. Now, she had gotten this return, obviously, before I got there, because it was just sitting there. I don't know that she would have ever returned that ballot. The reason the ballot was not, and here's how Republicans, I mean, just you see these little things they do, the little rules they impose in state legislatures that they control, the majority of, all over this country. They create hoops after hoops that voters have to jump through and jump through perfectly. One little misplaced mark, one little forgotten box, date, this, an address, and out that ballot goes. None of this used to exist, this kind of thing. We didn't used to vote like this, where people had to, you know, perform with such, you know, no error allowed. And the ballot made increasingly intricate so that perfect ballot became more difficult to pull off. My mother, on further, I mean, I looked at it, I thought, what the heck? And it was clear what had happened. I saw the mistake. And interestingly, the mistake was made not by my mother, but by my sister. Yes, yeah, Susan. Who had obviously, well, as it turns out, the ballot in Wisconsin. My mother could not fill out a ballot by herself, not because she's 100 years old. Anybody cannot fill out an absentee ballot by themselves. Everyone who puts a, who tries to vote absentee must have a witness who also must sign the ballot, date the ballot. What my sister had failed to do was put her address. The witness's address was missing. And consequently, my mother's ballot had been refused. Now, why? The ballot, the envelope that you see in Wisconsin, I'm looking at this stuff, it's beyond belief. The ballot that you send back is so complicated. And then the envelope in which the ballot must be put is literally from head to bottom filled with other hoops to jump through. It's not a clear, it is filled with your signature again, your address again, your witness's signature, address. Then there's something called an attendant. Then there is this. There are, you know, threats of imprisonment if you haven't done this properly. Unbelievable. Wisconsin has also taken like most of the drop boxes away. So once, if you were to vote this way, it is so difficult. Now, if we know Susan's no dummy, if somebody like my sister Susan and my still very smart mother didn't fill it out properly, and then perhaps didn't then, my mother and I are later today going to travel to the elections office where she's going to try to get her ballot reprocessed. It's I had never this was seeing in a very real and personal way why the Republicans keep coming up with these little tricks. You snag a Democratic. That's my mom. So here's what's interesting. So why did the Democratic Party? The Democratic Party in Wisconsin, fully aware of what's going on, obviously, and good for them, this was, I'm so grateful, they somehow watch to see what ballots are being rejected and have access to that information. And they saw that my mother, they had all her stuff. They knew she was a Democratic voter. So hence, they call her. And that guy was a volunteer who was calling to try to resurrect that one Democratic vote. And I... this is the way we're going to do elections? Incredible. He said, I see that your mother is 100 years old. So yeah, they had all the information on her and they knew she was a true Democrat. I said, yeah, she is. And I said, she's got all her marbles. He says, well, that's obvious. She votes Democrat. he said she's got more marbles than an awful lot of other people who are voting. Yeah, and we laughed. Ha, ha, ha. Well, I thanked him very much for his. See, this is the kind of volunteer work. This is a guy who's spending his time getting hung up on having people not answer the phone while he attempts in his little way to make sure that the election is an honest and fair one, despite the fact that the Republicans are trying so hard in state after state after state to rig it. You'll recall, I think we talked about this a week or so ago, how after the primary, there were four counties in Pennsylvania that had tried to throw out a whole bunch of ballots for exactly this kind of infraction. The infraction being, oh, there was a hoop they didn't jump through. They failed to put the day's date on the envelope of the ballot that they had filled out, which again, not necessary. Why does that have to be necessary? The only thing that matters is that that envelope gets to the people who count votes before the election. The date is not, it's ridiculous. But the Republicans in the legislature in every Republican state, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, have decreed that failure to put the date means you ain't going to get counted. Your vote won't be counted. And it was months and months after the election that the court finally told the four Republican counties, count those votes. Not putting a date on an envelope is no reason to disenfranchise a voter who has jumped through every other effing hoop that you put up. I hate these people. And if you'll allow me, one more thing. So I looked to see, make sure that my mother had, in fact, filled out the ballot properly, seeing now that Susan had failed to, in some respects. And, yeah, my mom was filling everything out. And then I saw that in her congressional race, she hadn't voted. I said, Mom, you didn't vote in the congressional race. And I saw that there were three possibilities. I just assumed that one of those possibilities was a Democrat. I assumed incorrectly. My mother said I didn't vote because there's no Democrat running for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives from Green Bay, Wisconsin. There's no Democrat even on the ballot. There's a Republican who we can assume has already won. There's a Libertarian. And there's some guy who says he's an independent. So while I was applauding the Democratic Party for having the apparatus in place to check on returned ballots, as happened here in this home the other day, I am livid that they would allow, especially since Green Bay is a city and we know cities have Democrats living in them. That they seed the election by not even putting somebody on the ballot for a House seat, not a state House seat, a congressional seat. mind-blowing. Just mind-blowing to me. So, okay, that's the election news from a place where I'm not usually at. And it was upsetting. Obviously, as you can hear, I am still so freaked about it. I'm furious. So anyway. Oh, no, there's one more thing. I said, Mom, there's a space here for write-in. Write your own name in. And she happily did. So let this be known that in the midterm election in Wisconsin in 2022, Sherlyn D. Miller did receive at least one vote for the U.S. Congress. Because no Democrat was on the effing ballot. Oh, my God. Okay. Something cute. I've been screaming at you. You know how I love that little section in the Sunday New York Times called Metropolitan Diary, because people just write in little vignettes, little incidents, little things that have happened to them in New York. And it always has to be sort of a very New York-y kind of thing. And here's one from yesterday's paper that made me laugh. And if you didn't see it, I'm going to share it with you now. It was sent in by a guy named Harold Dexler. And he said this. Once, back in the 1960s, I went into an Italian deli that had a great selection of meats and cheeses on open display. Wandering around, I came across three round cheeses hanging in a net bag. After squeezing them and finding them to be extremely hard, I called out to the man behind the counter at the front of the store, "Hey! What kind of cheeses are these?" The man said something I didn't quite hear, so I repeated my question a little louder this time. He answered again, but I still couldn't quite make out what he was saying. So I raised my voice and asked again, "What kind of cheese is this that I'm pinching?" He looked at me, raised his voice to match mine. "It's a bocce ball. Leave it alone." Okay, that's the last laugh I'm giving you. Probably. Not a good football weekend, huh? All right. No joy in Mudville, Green Bay either, even though they eked out a win, the Packers. The vaunted Aaron Rodgers, NFL's MVP from last year, yeah, Super Bowl winner, Hall of Fame guy. The Packers were up against the New England Patriots, who didn't have their first-string quarterback. He's out injured. Second-string quarterback started the game and left very soon. Head injury. So in comes their third-string quarterback, who turns out to be a rookie who looked like he was in middle school. Out onto the field trots a guy who has never in his life been in an NFL game and finds himself in Lambeau Field, iconic Lambeau Field, facing the NFL MVP, Aaron Rodgers. And this poor kid has never even thrown a football in a professional game. He was so obviously, you know, I thought, I can't even watch this. I mean, I started even rooting for him. I had to. You had to root for the poor little kid. He looked like he didn't shave yet. And then, damn it, that little kid didn't little by little get a little more assured. And before you knew it, he was outperforming. I don't know the final stats, but I think he outperformed Aaron Rodgers. They still lost. New England lost. Green Bay won in overtime, ignominiously. An ignominious win. And when the ignominious overtime win here was done, the network shifted to another ignominious game occurring in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I got to see the last horrible moments of the Steeler game as well. Normally I don't watch so much football, but oy, my mother, my brother, oy, God almighty. They watched 3 games yesterday. Unbelievable. Roger writes, do you think they're just focusing on old people looking to see if deceased people are voting? That's not what I want to believe, but I think you're right about. No. They're looking for people who failed. And my sister, it's Susan's fault. She did not fill out. It's very clear. I don't know why she's in. I'm jumping all over her. She almost cost mom her vote. The good news is they do, the poor souls who are running the election, the clerks, they are following the law. They said, this ballot does not meet the requirements. And they did at least send it back to my mother with an accompanying letter saying something wasn't done here, and it was for us to figure out. I mean, they did say there has to be a missing address, a missing signature, blah, blah, blah. And at least, yeah, so you get a second chance. But again, older people might not have, if my mother didn't have, it took 2 of her adult daughters to remedy this. No, it took 1 to remedy it, 1 to screw it up, but 2 to help her vote in the first place. And she needed a witness. What's that about? I mean, if a voter is on the voting rolls, they need I guess the witness is verifying that the person is not dead, is in fact alive, and is who they say they are. Meanwhile, they have the person's signature, which matches. It's just outrageous. But focusing on the fact that they would know she's 100 years old, too, that they would know, because obviously the Democratic Party guy knew. So focusing on old people, I am sure older people, or just people in a hurry. I don't know. And I don't know. My mother would not have heard that message. My mother would not have, in the pile of papers on her desk, that ballot would have worked its way to the bottom and probably never been counted. Just saying. But for me happening to be there, and when the guy left the message, happening to hear him say something about her ballot being returned, she never told me her ballot was returned. And when I asked, she said, she's a little confused about, I thought we said that, you know, whatever. Disgusting. Disgusting. These awful people. They can't win fair and square, and they know it. So they gotta create these labyrinths, these mazes, these hoops and hurdles to be jumped over and through. And you have to be a perfect 10. You can't have a, you don't stick the landing. Your vote's out. This is not the way a democracy, a true democracy. And I don't want to get into it. It's a Republican. This is not the way this is done. So that the Republicans have sowed doubts. First of all, they sow doubts that the elections are free and fair, which they are and have always been. But that's their what they knew. They had to first do that. So it doesn't matter if you can't find any fraud, which, as you know, you can't. Every once in a while, you see a little bit of somebody voted twice or this and that. It is so minuscule. And invariably, it is a Republican doing it. But first, you get that out there. It's unfair. There's so many ways to cheat. And then you make it more and more difficult to fill out a ballot, to send in a ballot, to have your ballot counted in a timely fashion. And this is how they operate in self-fulfilling prophecy. They tell you it's rigged because they're rigging it. Speaking of rigged, there was this, again, I think I was asking last time we spoke about, I never understood cheating because how do you feel good about the win? You know, if you know you didn't really, I mean, I guess it does require a conscience. It requires an ability to be self, to be honest with oneself, but I never understood cheating, how people could just be so proud of themselves knowing they cheated. And I think, yeah, cheaters often are. They don't lose any sleep over it. They get the trophy and they know they cheated, that they didn't really deserve it. And I'm sorry, in the way I'm made up, I just can't comprehend how that feels good. Well, this is a cheating story. It's out of Cleveland. Did you see this today? This is unbelievable. This is a fishing tournament. Who knew that in fishing tournaments there was big money involved? I mean, not like the kind of money that's involved in a heavyweight bout, but $30,000 to the team. I guess it was two people in a team to catch the, it's not the most fish, it's the poundage, right? And this was for the Team of the Year award. The competition was held Friday. They're weighing the walleye. That's what it was, walleye tournament. And the fish went up on the, each catch is weighed. And the guy who's heading the tournament thought, what? As the scale went up to 34 or something, he thought, what? He said, I don't think that can be right. He's the owner of the Lake Erie Walleye Trail. And they have the tournament. So he followed his gut and he grabbed one of the recently deceased walleye and ran his hand over its gut. And then he felt like he might have felt something a little strange. So he gutted it. He sliced open that dead walleye. He plunged his hand into its flesh. And he pulled out a steel gray egg-sized weight. The two guys who had turned out they had put weights in all their fish. And they're standing there, the two guys who put the weights in the fish, as their fish is being, you know, as they're being found out for the cheaters they are. And the guy who's running the tournament goes berserk. He's screaming at these guys. By the way, their names are Jacob Runyon and Chase Kominsky. And they were so close to snagging that 30 thou, but for the gut feeling that Jason Fisher, who was running the place, had and proved to be correct. And he, it's amazing. I mean, apparently all the other fishermen started like, you know, screaming at these guys, Fisher was screaming at him, get out of here, get out of here. But it was like the other competitors are like, and he was afraid there was going to be, violence. And he was screaming, don't hurt him, just get him out of here. So that's what happened. They were disqualified and found out. And the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, has launched an investigation into what is the underbelly of competitive angling. Who knows? This can't be the first time. There's actually people who are professional walleye fishermen. So, you know, you can make a living if you're really good at this. And one such guy, he's also named Chase. One of these cheaters was named Chase. But if you're named Chase, you end up chasing walleye. Chase Kominsky's one of the cheaters. The professional walleye guy is a guy named Chase. Come on, where's your name again? Can't find it. I'll chase somebody else. And he said Chase Parsons, and he has a national TV show called The Next Bite. And he said, this is just sickening. This is pathetic. And I guess the fishing community, the competitive fishing community, is just freaking out. Well, yeah. So now all it takes are these. And, you know, the thing is it turns out that these two cheaters had been winning all summer. They won an event in Lorain, Ohio in June. Damn if in Ashtabula in July they didn't clean up a little more, Geneva in September, and they were going to cap off their year with this 30 thou awarded at in Cleveland. Wow. So, anyway. There you have it. Oh, wait a minute. They also found that fillets from other fish had been stuffed down the walleye's throats to beef them up. Because unlike weights, the fillets would not have been as noticeable. They'd feel like fish flesh because they are. So you could also cheat in that way. I mean, obviously, you couldn't stuff enough fillet down the fish's, the poor dead fish, that would equal just a weight being shoved down there. But wow. Okay, that's all. That's all I got on that. But I listen, it's better than worrying about Vladimir Putin launching World War III, right? Which brings me to this. Just one more, because it's easy and is not depressing. Hey, speaking of depressing, I just want to note the passing of Chief Justice Max Beyer of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. I saw that on my. I was shocked. I mean, I did know him not well, but I what a nice guy. Damn, too young, and I don't know how. I haven't seen why the hell happened. Damn. Anyway, that was. And I was going through the obits. And you know who else popped? Any of you notice this? Sunday's PG. The obits. You're going through the obits and you're, you know, oh my, oh this, oh wow. And then there's a picture of a guy smiling at you who you know immediately. And you're taken aback because he's been dead for years. And I'm thinking, whoa, whoa, whoa. Is this somebody, is this absolutely his twin? What? And it was Dick Thornburg. I'm just saying. He was in the obits yesterday. Now, here's what I guess is the reason. Because it wasn't a big, long obit. It was a very one of the shorter obits. And, you know, with him, it could have been a page after page after page after page after page. He was a governor, he was the U.S. Attorney General, he was, you know, a lifetime of public service. But there he was, you know, that he always had a kind face. There he was smiling at you. And I thought, well, what? And it just says Richard Lewis Thornburg died peacefully of natural causes on December 31, 2020. Well, yeah. But that's why. Stop and think. December 21, 2020. Where we all learned a new word. COVID-19. Right? COVID-19. So this is a memorial service that has been postponed because for 2 years for Thornburg. Just want to say. Clarence, I see you're there. So come on in. By the way, if you want to go to the service for Dick, it's October 16th at 3 at Shadyside Presbyterian Church. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Keep this short because it's a reflection of the way my brain works. It goes back to the fish story. And I busted out laughing. I busted out laughing when you said something. And I don't know if you heard it or if anybody else did, but I heard it. You know, you what talked about the judge or the guy who owns the thing. You know, he looks at the scales and he gets his gut feeling, right? And so he picks up the fish and he feels its guts. And he feels its guts. And then at the end you said, because of a gut
feeling.
He
gutted it.
But he rubbed its guts first. He felt the guts. And he had a gut feeling. And then at the end of it, you said, because of a gut feeling, these guys were caught. And I went, it works two ways. The guy had a gut feeling, and he felt the guts.
And he felt the guts. Yeah, right.
Because because of a gut feeling. I said, that's funny, but did anybody else hear that? I said, probably not, because my brain's weird.
Well, but you, that's how your brain likes words and puns.
Yeah.
And I was, obviously, I was playing with the word gut. I was doing that on purpose.
Okay, I'm glad you were doing it. Huh?
Yeah, I was.
Okay, good. Because that was really funny.
Although I can't necessarily say that I knew I wanted to say his gut feeling. I don't know that I thought of that I had reversed, feeling the gut.
Okay.
I did want to continue to use gut because I understood the gut. Gut was the pun.
Okay, good. Well.
What did you just pull out of the microwave there?
Oh, I was heating up some coffee.
Oh, okay.
My coffee got cold as I was on hold. And by the way,
I'm sorry.
My coffee bold. No.
Okay.
All right. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Okay. Gut feeling. Okay. I was going to share this. I think I'm going to let my dog back in. I know he's just been sitting outside the door. Hang on. No, I can talk and walk. Hang on. Past the Charles W. Morgan. Hi, Blue. You just come in here now. Okay. What else we got? Oh, I just wanted to share another, just a quickie from the diary, because I thought this is funny about human nature, too. A woman wrote into the Metropolitan diary. I brought a bunch of my old clothes to the local consignment store. In the pile was a dress I liked, but I'd never worn. Nonetheless, I began to miss it once it was gone. Now, ain't that the truth, right? Right. Oh, I don't know. So you give something away and then you think, oh, I miss it. So this woman says, so I began to visit it. She said, I would visit it at the store while it hung there waiting to be bought. It didn't sell. And I was insulted. Ah, yes, of course you were. That's something I chose. It's beautiful. Why aren't you buying it? And then, she says, months and months, her dress hung there and nobody bought it. And so when it got discounted to 12 measly bucks, she got so enraged. He bought it. I love it. So she bought it, and her the last line of her thing is, I bought it back, and I'm wearing it now as I write this. That's from Jane Ziegelman. And I want to thank Jane for that laugh. What else we got? Oh, God. Do I wanna? Not particularly. No, I'm gonna save it. Let me do another little rant about nothing in particular because I don't want to draw attention to the fact that the Supreme Court, that once august institution, now reviled by a majority of Americans and distrusted, I guess is the proper word. Up to 75% of Americans don't respect it. That's something. We want to thank the Republicans for that too. Good work, guys. I mean, you are just, when it comes to disassembling democracy, you are really, really the champions. No doubt about it. So I don't really want to talk about that. And I don't really want to talk about the other horrors, as I said, Vladimir Putin, Ukraine, the end of democracy, the violence being increasingly sort of, you can feel it roiling right under the surface of our daily political and social and governmental life. I don't want to leave that tomorrow for Susan. So let me talk about something else that has become, well, it's not become, it's been a pet peeve of mine for an incredibly long time. And I have to assume that you all share it, or at least will commiserate with me. And it has to do with when you come into a home that is not yours, as I am now in my mother's home. The most basic appliance can be so challenging that you lose your mind. I have been flummoxed in the last few days by my mother's stove, by her cable provider, by her television set, by her microwave, and by her friggin' telephone. Now, it used to be, not too long ago, I don't think, that you could go into anybody's house and know how to use their telephone, right? A telephone was a telephone. You could handle their refrigerator, their washer. Oh, I'm going to try the washer today. She got a new one. God help us. Right? The washer, the dryer. Yeah, it's just sort of basic stuff. You look at the dials. It's all clearly marked. And my mother's appliance. I'm going to blame Susan on this one, too, because I think she's had a hand in buying these appliances. They are in friggin' comprehensible. My mother's microwave. I want to microwave something like Clarence just did. Let's say you just want it to run for a minute and heat up some coffee. Well, shouldn't it just say, just press the one, that's a minute, and it should be off and running. Now that's what mine does because I like simple. My mother's. Nothing happens. Turns out, and I finally got this from my brother, who had been through the horrors of the microwave before me. He said, no, you want it to start. You have to punch that black button that is not marked in any way in the middle, because you can also turn that button. You have to punch that black button twice. Why? What? Okay, fine. But then why doesn't it say on the face of the microwave, punch the black button twice to start? It's like the basic thing that somebody wanting to use the microwave would need to know. And it is not simply obvious. Because normally, if you want something to start, the button would say, start, wouldn't it? I know mine does. It's labeled start. It's got simple buttons, start, stop. This friggin' microwave, and for that matter, mine too, and I bet yours as well, have all kinds of button stuff on it, even the simple one like mine. They always have a button, a special dedicated button that says popcorn. And that's bullshit too. Because that, what, that means if you buy those pre-done bags of popcorn, but depending on the wattage of your mic, I so hate, Who are the idiots? Who are the sadists? The elitist sadists who get paid big bucks to design these tools that we use every day, and who clearly delight in making them as ludicrously complicated as they can. And they congratulate each other on it. Did you see that my microwave can now, I don't know, do cartwheels? Who gives a flying fuck? Came upon my brother the other day going at me, bouncing off the walls in the kitchen because he couldn't figure out how to stop the oven. The oven. He's pushing buttons left and right. And of course, when you start doing that, see, the minute you start just indiscriminately freaking out and punching buttons left and right, you are very likely to be creating a kind of situation that you will never recover from. I had the same complaint about my own car. I drove, God, I got 10 hours in a car. So you want to, you know, you want to create an environment. I had an audio book. I put my phone, I plugged my phone in, but I also had to have my map thing available. And I kept getting things on the screen saying, if so-and-so is not connected, or the CMG or the PYS or the what the hell, I don't even know what you're talking about, is not conducive or compatible with whatever friggin' thing you got here. And I just wanna, yeah. It's not good for my health. Why shouldn't there be a movement? Can't you think to simplify? Why wouldn't a capitalist think, you know, I'm going to create microwave, an oven, a washing machine, a dishwasher, a dryer, a car. I'm going to, that is so obvious to operate. Don't need all the extraneous, just for somebody who wants to friggin' wash their clothes or get from point A to point B, have some control of their environment as they do it. You know what I mean? Why is that so difficult? Margaret says, I think Kenny did well in his first game. He will be. Yeah, Pickett's charge. Well, yeah. I wish him well. I've gotten to the point where I just can't stand the whole thing. I mean, the whole, these beautiful young men trying to kill each other. I always feel more pain for the loser than I do joy for the winner. And I've gotten to the point, which is not a good place to be. And that is where that gives a bad name to empathy. That's not how it should be. And I think I'm going insane. Anyway, so there's that. I think we're done. As I said, I never know exactly what time it is, but I got to get off because I know my brother's heading back to Michigan and got to say goodbye. And I'll talk at you again tomorrow. And Susan should be joining us, or I'll scream at her about mom's ballot. You have a good one. Bye-bye.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Come On Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.